Morena e te whānau, nau mai hoki mai ki Māori Millionaire. Welcome back to the Māori Millionaire podcast. Ko te kahu kura puentana hau, I am your podcast host. If you are new here, then welcome to the show. And if you've been here before, then welcome back. This is our first podcast episode of 2026. And it's the first podcast episode I've actually recorded in quite a long time. If you've been a long time follower, you'll know that I have been a caregiver for both of my kuia and both of them have passed away now. So I took a bit of time off mahi to just rest and focus on grieving. And obviously that process isn't done yet, but today I really just wanted to record a podcast episode and share some of the insights that I got from reading Rich Dad, Poor Dad, the money lessons that school never taught us. So many of you guys have requested these. You guys are just in love with my book. I don't know, like, you guys want to know what books I'm reading. Like, that's probably one of the most common questions I get is, what books are you reading? Give us some tips. All of those things, which is amazing. And in 2026, I'm going to do that for you all. So, nau mai, haere mai. Let's just get on to what I have learned from this book. Oh my gosh, I was going to say from this booka booka, from this puka puka. Whether you love it or hate it, this book forces you to question the way you think about money. And honestly, some of it, you know, I've read this book so many times. I first read it when I was a little kid. And the really cool thing about this book is that you can read it again and again and again, and you can pick new things up from it. And some of those things are quite uncomfortable. And what that means is that there's usually something worth paying attention to, because if something's uncomfortable, then it's giving you information of where there is more work to be done and like what is the thing that's making you uncomfortable. And I think throughout this it was just challenging me to think about how I am utilizing my pūtea and whether or not I am taking full advantage of the money that is coming to me and being able to harness that to achieve the financial goals that I have. You all know that I'm working towards becoming a millionaire, and I know many of you are also. So let's just dive into it. Section one, mindset before money. One of the biggest ideas in this book is the shift from saying, I can't afford it, to asking, how can I afford it? I have been a longtime preacher of this whakaaro because I learned it, you know, one of the first times I read this book, but I've actually read many money books and they all talk about this concept in either the same way or a little bit different. And so this one question, it really changes everything, because I can't afford it shuts the conversation down. It's like, well, I can't do it. I can't afford it. Just like saying, I can't go to the gym, or I can't da 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 da. Because you're just saying a statement that doesn't allow for any room for movement or growth. Whereas a question like, how can I afford it, opens your brain to problem solving. Now for me, I have been so good at doing this and challenging myself when I think I can't afford it to go, how can I afford it? But at the same time, there are some things in my life where I'm still playing that narrative instead of thinking like a rich person and just going, how can I make this happen? What are the things that I can do to make this happen? Who do I need to reach out to make this happen? What connections do I already have that can make this happen? You know, like, how can I make this happen? And I just want to be so real with you guys and share an example with you. For the longest time, I have wanted to grow my team for Māori Millionaire, and I believe that that will really support me achieving the goals that I want to for this pākehi, to be able to create more impact. But that I can't afford it narrative, you know, continues to play. And I've got contractors and I've got people working, you know, doing different things, but I've, for the longest time, wanted like a PA, and I want to bring someone on part-time or full-time, but that narrative comes into play. And I think one of the things for me is when you hire someone, you know, for like a permanent position, obviously their living becomes your, you know, you can't just not pay them, you know, that's so not tika. And so that's something for me. And I was actually talking to another business owner, and I, for some reason, I was like, well, you kind of want to have like, I don't know, 12 months of their pay saved to be able to hire them. And I was actually talking to other business owners and they were like, girl, you do not need to have 12 months of their pay there, because when they start working for you, they're going to increase your income and, you know, that's going to therefore pay their wages. But that's just like such a different, it's obviously like, it's taking a risk, and that's scary to me. And so I'm really going to challenge myself this year to go, how can I afford it, and open my brain to problem solving. And I think this book also makes a really important distinction that broke is temporary. You know, I've been broke before, but poor is a mindset, because that mindset is what's going to keep those patterns playing out over and over and over again. You can earn good money and still be stuck if your habits and thinking doesn't change them. And I know this to be a fact because I've met so many people who are high income earners, but they have no money management skills. And so everything comes in and everything goes out. Money does not fix the bad habits. It only amplifies them. And we see this a lot with a lot of people who move over to Australia with the promise of earning more money and then wanting to set their families up. And I'm not saying this is everyone, but I do see some people moving over to Australia with that intention, and they go from making like 70k in New Zealand and then they're all of a sudden making 200 grand, yet they're still in the same financial position because their habit when they were making 70 grand was everything that comes in, we spend it. Now they're making 200 grand, everything that comes in, spend it. Now, obviously, not every single person is like this. I have seen and met people who have moved over to Australia and completely transformed their lives with this extra income. But obviously, that comes with intention and it comes with money habits that you can have as your income increases. Because money, like making more money, isn't going to solve the problems if you have a habit of spending 100% of what you have or living outside of your means. Because you're just going to, like, instead of just buying McDonald's every day, and that's like living above your means in New Zealand, then you're making 200 grand, you're going to just start blowing and buying boats and stuff, you know, like I'm just, you know, making stuff up. But like, that's the point. You need to have this whole mindset shift that allows you to look after the money that you're getting and look at it as a real opportunity to grow your wealth, not as an opportunity to experience lifestyle inflation. Lifestyle inflation is when, as your income increases, your lifestyle does as well. So you go from eating budget bread to Vogels, or just as an example, you know what I'm saying? Like your income increases, and so you, instead of getting $1 bread, you get $6 bread, you know? Just an example. Number two is that the rich do not work for money. Poor and middle class people work for money. The rich make money work for them. And I think Robert Kiyosaki, I've actually met him in real life. I went to his event in Auckland. And one thing that I noticed from him is that he is very straight to the point. He just says things as they are. So, you know, poor and middle class people work for money. The rich make money work for them. But I kind of like the straightforwardness because it's just so blunt. What he says is that school trains us to be good employees, but not to be financially free. And I understand this with my own experiences at school, because at school I struggled a lot because it was just yes or no. It was right or wrong. There was no middle ground. And in life, that's not how life works. There is no right or wrong. It's like everyone has their different opinions of what's right and wrong. And there's so many different ways to succeed in life. It's not just one way or the other. It's not just university, get a good job, get a mortgage. You know, that's not the only pathway in life. And I think that school definitely pushes you towards that direction, at least the schools that I've been to. And I just, you know, think that our jobs give us income. And that is what we can use to funnel towards our goals. Now, your assets are different from your job. He actually has this acronym, and it's J-O-B, just over broke. Because if you're trading all of your time for your money, that gives your boss the power. It means that if you lost your job, the boss has the power of your life, you know, for you not to be able to pay your bills. Whereas if you buy assets, you're holding the power. And that's what creates freedom. And so your job, he talks about this in the book, that's not the thing that's going to make you rich. And if you have that mindset, that's the wrong mindset, because you're giving the power to someone else. You're giving, you know, so many people do this with the government, with their job, with literally anything. And it's not their responsibility to make you rich. That's your job. Your job is to make you rich. Your job is to use the resources that come your way and turn that into assets. Your job is to live below your means. Your job is to do all of these different things, to take responsibility. Whereas a lot of people who do not get the results that they want in life, they're blaming other people, they're blaming their boss, they're blaming the system, they're blaming all these other things. But it's our job, it's our responsibility to make ourselves rich, okay? Number three, why financial literacy actually matters. It's not how much you earn, as I said, it's how much you keep and for how long you actually keep that for. How many generations are you keeping this putia in your whānau? Rich people buy assets, poor people mostly have expenses, and the middle class often buy liabilities that they think are assets. Now, I just want to go over this sentence again because I think some people will hear this and go, but what does that actually mean? Liabilities, according to Robert, are things that cost you money, things that are taking money out of your pocket, whereas assets are things that are putting your money into your pocket. So Robert has this quite controversial idea that houses, owner-occupied houses, are not assets because they're taking money out of your pocket each week. They're not adding income into your pocket. If you live in the whare and you're not renting it out, there's no way to monetize having this house. He considers that a liability. Whereas, say, for example, in an investment property, he would consider that an asset if it was cash flow positive. And so what he's saying when he says the middle class often buy liabilities they think are assets, he's saying the middle class will buy big owner-occupied houses because they think that they're assets, whereas those things are actually taking money out of their pocket every single week, and that's not allowing them to therefore invest into assets that are actually going to make them more money. Now, I just wanted to clarify that Robert has a very different perspective of what assets and liabilities are to other definitions out there, and so I just wanted to clarify that. But a really good question today to ask yourself is, if your income stopped today, how long could you survive? If your income stopped today, how long could you survive? Now, our goal is to obviously increase this and to build passive income streams so that we can still have money coming in. If your job stopped, if you got fired, or if they made you redundant. Another really interesting whakaaro that Robert shared is that savings are important, but they're not just for bills. He saves to invest into assets. He doesn't save for bills. And he talks about this in a really interesting way, that rich people pay themselves first. And I've heard this so many times over, but I didn't really understand what this kind of meant. And I think that I've gained a little bit of clarity over what this is. So as a business, as an example, you earn your money, you can spend your money before you pay taxes on business expenses, on business, you know, things, and then you pay tax on it afterwards, you know. Whereas if you're an employee, you get paid your after-tax income and you spend the leftovers. So what he's saying about paying yourself first is, I'm trying to think because I was actually listening to two audiobooks like back to back. So I finished this one and then I listened to another one which was quite similar, and I can't remember if it was him that was saying this or if it was the other book that I was reading. But I'm pretty sure that it was Robert who was discussing paying yourself first is about using the money that you have, investing it into assets. And he said that you're never going to have this like big push to earn money if it's only for yourself. Whereas if you have the tax man, or if you have creditors, if you have people who you owe money banging on your door saying you owe us money, you're going to move more because there's going to be more pressure to pay them. And so that's why he says he saves for assets as opposed to saving for bills. Now, this is obviously a very different kind of worldview, and I'm not saying that this is how you should do it. I'm just sharing what this book is discussing. But it's definitely an eye-opener and something that I'm going to do some more research about and we'll share more with you. Like, what does this look like? What are the actual things the rich do paying themselves first? Section 4, assets before luxuries. I loved this one because I had forgotten about this specific section in the book. But one of the clearest lessons in the book is poor and middle class people buy luxuries first. So they buy nice watches, they buy Nike, they buy branded clothes, they buy nice iPhones, they buy all of these different things. Whereas rich people will invest in assets first, and then they use the income from those assets to buy the luxuries, which don't you think is just like so cool? So he was talking about his ex-wife, Kim, and she, I can't remember, I think it was a car, but it was like a nice car or something, and they had used the assets to buy that car. And I just thought that was so cool and such a different narrative to what I see so many people doing. He said that a promotion doesn't automatically make you wealthier. It only helps if the extra money is actually being used to build assets, to buy assets. Otherwise, your lifestyle just expands to meet the income. Lifestyle inflation, all right? Number 5, work to learn, not to earn. This one was huge for me because, as you all know, I'm self-employed. So I don't have a job, you know, like a normal pay, oh my gosh, PAYE job. But, you know, he discussed working to learn, not to just earn. So he said chasing pay and security can feel safe in the short term, but it's often risky in the long term. The most valuable skills aren't technical. He recommends people learn things like communication, sales, negotiation, and understanding how money flows. He said that the world is full of very talented people who struggle financially, not because they lack skills, but because they're uncomfortable selling or advocating for themselves. So I want to give you an example. He talked about a mechanic, I think, that was doing some work on his car. He knows nothing about cars. I know nothing about cars. Whereas this mechanic was able to fix it in like, you know, 20 minutes. And it was quite cheap, you know. And so he talks about it, all of these talented people who are really helpful, but they aren't able to make the money that they should be making because they don't know how to sell. They don't know how to advocate for themselves. They don't know how to communicate. They don't know sales. They don't know negotiation. They don't understand how money flows. These are a long list of different skills that he thinks are really required if you want to move yourself ahead, if you want to obviously become wealthy. And so I was looking at this from my perspective of, okay, what are the skills that I need to learn? What are my goals in 2026 for the specific skills I want to learn? Definitely to improve my communication, sales, negotiation, and understanding how money flows at a higher level. And so I've been reflecting on what opportunities do I think will be helpful moving me forward, even if that means potentially going back into part-time work to learn a skill. And I think this has been really just interesting to ponder on and consider. The last section that I'm going to talk about today was around fear, failure, and action. And I loved this so much because he talks about fear of losing money, fear of looking stupid, fear of failing. And he talked about them in such a normal way where he experiences them, I experience them, you experience them. We all experience fear. And he talks about fear being such a common thing, but it's how you respond to that fear, because losing isn't failure, it's tuition. If you're going to fail, fail fast, learn and keep moving. Everyone wants freedom, but not everyone is willing to be uncomfortable long enough to get it. And I think that's just like a banging sentence. Everyone wants freedom, but not everyone is willing to be uncomfortable long enough to get it. Rich Dad, Poor Dad isn't about getting rich quick. It's about thinking differently, asking better questions, taking responsibility for your financial education. And I think that school did not teach us these core concepts. School never taught us how money works, and that's not our fault, but it is our responsibility now to learn now. That's my responsibility. If this episode challenged you, then that's an amazing thing. And if it helped, please share it with someone who needs to hear it. If you want to share it on your story, I would absolutely love that. Make sure to tag me. And just a final disclaimer, obviously none of the information provided should be considered as personalized financial advice. This is all for general educational purposes. But that is us for today, E Te Whānau. I really actually have been enjoying reading these books, taking notes, because usually I will just read books and I won't really take as many notes. But because I'm creating content from them, I am really intentionally taking notes, and so I'm learning more. And so I actually just wanted to thank all of you guys for giving me this opportunity to reread all of these books that I've read, and to absorb more financial knowledge from them so that I can share them with you all. But this is January the 2nd. I actually had this goal that I was going to record a podcast every day in January. It's January 2nd, and this is our first podcast of the year. So let's just see how that happens. But I really want to grow this community this year. I want to create more impact. I want to help you guys more. So if you have any book recommendations, if you have any podcast requests, if you have any questions, please shoot me a DM. Instagram is the best way to contact me, because I am so excited to tautoko everyone and to give my everything to this kaupapa this year. It's been 2025 was a crap year, honestly. It was taumaha as, and I'm excited to, you know, just really be at peace and know that the mahi that I'm doing is creating impact in our community, and that's my goal overall. So I just wanted to thank you for being here and thank you for being part of this community. I hope you enjoyed this podcast episode, and I will be back, hopefully, our popo with another episode. All right, ka kite te whānau.